Welcome to the House of Strauss.
Yeah, go for it.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Are joined on House of Strauss by Eli Lake, who is at the Free Press writing, podcasting, somebody for many years, many people have read about foreign policy especially, and a range of cultural subjects, including but not limited to Kanye West. I gather you want to talk basketball. I gather that I've pulled you in here. And you look at me. You know what you are? You know what you are, Eli? You are my least favorite kind of intellectual. I know that sounds harsh, but let me explain. Now that I'm a Substacker, I'm a person of Substack, I might go to an event and there are people who write about the heavy issues of the day, and I want to get in there. I want to prove my mettle and prove I'm not just some sort of dumb sports writer. But then, lo and behold, one of these intellectuals will be a huge basketball fan, and they'll know who I am. And they just
and like follow you. Yeah, because you're like one of that generation of basketball writers that I thought was like, yeah. Oh my God, you brought, first of all, great reporting chops. Like the Winning Machine was like great reporting. But then it was like, you explained analytics in a way that didn't make me want to have my eyes glaze over. And I am very much appreciative for you. And there's a couple others that I think have really done a good job. You know who's good? I don't know if you still... Do you know Thinking Basketball, the YouTuber?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that guy's good. That guy's
really
good.
He's really good.
Ben Taylor.
Yeah, that guy. And it's like, just, I like it. It's like a little, you know, he'll give me like a 15, 20 minute video. And I always come away from it like, I learned something from that. Like, that's great. Like, I have a deeper appreciation. And it's not the same old, like, nobody's talking about how the Clippers did. I'm like, oh, stop it. Oh, I can't hear it again. You know?
Well, I think what he does well, and I think what when it works, it's beautiful when you can accomplish it. And I might have gotten there a few times. Now I'm being humble about it. Like, yeah. Oh, so I might have done it a few times.
Well, you do reporting. I mean, that's like a whole different thing. So,
yeah, he does a different thing. But one of the more successful early pieces I had back in the Warriors dynasty days was just this big article describing how they built their defense. And I think when you can take something simple people are interested in and there's mystery there and then unspool the mystery with complexity. I don't think it works when it's just a bunch of complexity that you're just vomiting out there. Some, I don't want to seem too critical, but some of the strategy stuff people do where, oh, they're running this action and they're running that action. You can do that part after you say, this is the simple thing they're trying to accomplish. This is the big thing that they're trying to accomplish. And you fill that with content. I'm sure if I ever did meet you and you cornered me at one of these events, like Lyndon B. Johnson cornering a senator and punching his arm, and
have you read the Caro? I mean, that's the Robert Caro is the greatest. Yeah, okay, I love that. That's a good reference.
Well, if you did that, I'm sure though you would have smart things to say and good things to say. The funny thing about your ilk of people want to talk basketball is you'll be talking with somebody who's a well-reputed intellectual, and you'll have such admiration for them, and they have expounded on topics that you couldn't possibly really understand. They'll just go, LeBron's a bitch, right? LeBron's a bitch, and he flops.
Sorry. I'm going to come on the show and just be like, yeah, so like the Sixers are going to sweep like through the whole thing. It's going to be like faux again, like, you know.
I mean, they're intriguing. They're intriguing. I don't know. It all comes with the caveat of Embiid's health. But what I like about them is how goddamn old they are. I think this is the Kevin Arnovitz theory that grown ass men win playoff games. It's maybe optimal to have a Denver Nuggets where everyone's in their prime. But if you can't have that, it's good to just have some old ass guys who the very next season are going to be useless. You know, the Otto Porter for the Warriors, for these role players. And
the Nick Batum for the Sixers.
The Nick Batum. So I see that. I'm mighty intrigued. And, you know, I don't know if it's ever wise as a Sixers fan.
No, they break your heart. They are such a heartbreaker. I it's so much emotional energy every year. Like last year, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm through with them. I was like, screw it. I don't care. I'm not going to pay attention. And I like, I did something. I'll just admit this. I removed every basketball podcast from my feed. I unsubscribed, not because of the podcast, but I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know about it. This is wasted time. Why did I invest so much in this stupid team? They always lose in the second round. And then they lure you back. Like Embiid's season, the first half was so amazing. I didn't know what to do other than to say, wow, we're just watching greatness. We're watching, we'll never see, like, this is, you know, like, I remember, for me, the dominant player that I remember, I think we're around the same age, is Shaq in the 2000 to 2003 run with the Lakers. And I thought that Shaq and Kobe team, they beat my Sixers, obviously, with Allen Iverson, but I thought that Shaq and Kobe team was, like, the best team that I would have, like, a real adult memory of. I mean, I remember the Bulls. I should say, I do remember the Bulls, and I watched the Bulls, but that was the team I was like, those guys are unbeatable. Shaq is unbeatable. You can't do anything about him. And Embiid, like, this is, like, blasphemy here, but, like, it's like Embiid is, like, physical like Shaq, but he can shoot a three, and he can shoot that little pull-up jumper, and he can do a Euro step. And I just, I mean, like, what are you going to do with that? It's like, I love watching. That's why I love basketball. You get a chance to really see the greatness in individuals, not just teams. You know, similar like with Steph Curry, you're like, we're never going to see a shooter like that. That's just incredible. I love watching that. And with that's what how I felt like Embiid just kept improving and improving and improving his game. And then, of course, he's injured because he always gets injured. And now he's like, we don't know if he's 50% or 70%. And all right. Enough. That's my therapy session.
The opportunity is right there. I don't know anybody.
Celtics are really good. They're really good.
They are, but you can't just walk into the playoffs and spend your point differential to acquire wins. I think sometimes it gets analyzed that way. And look, if they march on through, they've only been announcing they do so the entire season, so it wouldn't be a shock. But I don't think anybody really trusts them, you know. So
well, they shouldn't trust them. And I say this as a Sixers partisan because they have not performed. I mean, there are good reasons. There's the Doc Rivers reasons. There's the Ben Simmons reasons. There's all kinds of, like, Joel has been injured. All fair, but until you get to a conference finals or the finals, and until you show you can really win, then there's always going to be, like, trust issues, and there should be. That's just life. That's how it goes.
It certainly is how it goes.
We're going to talk about the substance, but before we do, we can just, in the amuse-bouche portion, I have to ask a couple dying questions because it's, you know, a great opportunity for me. I mean, is this the end of the winning machine?
Ah, well, it's victory machine. I didn't want to correct you the first time.
I'm so sorry about that.
You know, it's okay. I'm not offended at all. It's a weird title. And frankly, the publisher wanted that title. Now, they did a lot of other great things.
You know what it is? Winning time and victory. I screwed it up in my head. My bad.
No, I wanted something that was more blood and bones. I wanted appropriate fear, which is a phrase that Popovich always uses. And I like that. I like that phrase, and maybe there are a few others, but I don't actually have any emotional attachment to the title of the book. And that might be a surprise to people that sometimes when you write a book, you don't actually choose the title, which, you know, what are you going to do? I got to write a book and I got paid for it, and that was cool. Is it the end? You know, the funny thing is, so here's my take on the Warriors, which is related to my take on the league. Obviously, they are so far from what they were, but I think that almost inspires this weird conflation of thinking, give up hope, it's all over, they blow it all up, reset everything. The reason I don't feel that way is that, they're very far from what they were. They're oddly not far from being the second best team in the Western Conference. I don't think the league at the top tier is as great right now as it was when the Warriors were at their peak. When you go back and look at 2016, for instance.
Yeah, you had that Spurs team. That Spurs team was so good. Yeah. Yes. And you had OKC with KD and Russ and Harden. So, or not Harden, but I guess, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and obviously the Cavs were completely stacked. They won the championship that year, and knocking on the door on the outside as the team people didn't trust, but was very talented. You had the Lob City Clippers still existing. And
I like that Lob City team.
Oh yeah.
I thought Blake Griffin in his prime was just a terror. He was great.
Oh yeah. No, they maybe in another era they would have had more success. They just seemed cursed by whatever. But that's just an example of how the top tier of the league right now, it just seems like the Nuggets are one of those teams. And everybody else, I mean, do you trust them? You can say good things. Maybe history will validate the Celtics as good as their point differential. But it wasn't like what it was back in the day where you had to be just contending, or you were, you know, totally out of it. It just seems like if you're good, if you're decent and Jamal Murray turns an ankle, who knows? Maybe you steal one like 2022. So I look at the team. They obviously have flaws. They obviously have problems. But if they can flip Kuminga for a guy who can play make and just help Steph with some of the responsibilities on offense, I think that would go a long way towards making them a team that can avoid the play-in. And if you avoid the play-in, again, you're not going to be as good as the Nuggets. It's impossible. But you're kind of on the periphery. You're kind of knocking on the door. And if something crazy happens, maybe you make another run. And that's how I see it. I see Kuminga as the guy I would try to shop because he is appealing to other teams. Maybe it's the wrong decision.
Get rid of Jordan Poole. Well, that's some of the greatest NBA fool's gold ever.
Oh my God. I mean, that's a trade they don't regret. So I look at Kuminga as somebody who is obviously talented and somebody other teams might salivate over, but he just has never fit seamlessly. He looks like he should be amazing at defense. He has not been amazing at defense.
Right.
And so that's really the only asset I think that they have to move forward. People talk about Clay. I think that's a very simple conversation. It's here's the number, take it or leave it. If you want to be somewhere anonymous and play out the end of your career sad in a place like Orlando, like your Patrick Ewing, then you can do that. But we've paid you a bajillion dollars after you got injured. I think that maybe you owe us one. You don't have kids or a wife. How much is the money really mattering to you? Don't you enjoy taking the boat to the games? Isn't that enjoyable, right? That's something you like.
When all is said and done, is Clay a Hall of Famer?
Yes. I mean, that's the way the NBA is. Where yeah, if
what about Draymond's a Hall of Famer, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think Draymond's stats don't tell you this full story. We all watched him play. He was one of the most disruptive defenders I've ever seen. And to have that and also be, like, in his peak, a great passer is just a really rare combination of skills. To approach Rodman-level defense and have and more than just be like not a minus on D on offense, but really a key part of that offense is like he's got to be in the Hall, no doubt.
Oh yeah, and is underrated right now because he's so annoying. I mean, you can annoy us into underrating you. I feel like it happened to Reggie Miller as an announcer. I think Reggie Miller annoyed so many people as a broadcaster, they started making little digs and slights, and I saw him start to fall down. You know, funny things happen after a career is over to people's reputation all time.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think Scottie Pippen.
The thing about Reggie Miller is that statistically, right, if you just looked at like his field goal percentage and he's very good at shooting and didn't give you much else. And if you're comparing him to somebody like who had a shorter career, but like a Tracy McGrady, you'd be like, wow, Tracy McGrady was a more complete player, which he kind of was. But
yeah,
the thing that you have to understand about Reggie Miller is like, there are just too many really important playoff games.
It's terrifying.
He was like, there's a few guys like that, like Jordan, like where you just like, he's going to find a way, Larry Bird, like people like that. And he had that intangible thing. He had so many big games when it mattered. That you just have to like respect that. And if you didn't watch the games, you really couldn't tell from just looking at his stats.
Well, and also there's more respect for shooting now and the gravity, right? Nobody talked like that back then, right? That just wasn't really a thing. That wasn't part of the analysis. So our view of these guys, it sort of goes up and down. I feel like Scottie Pippen has gotten more love because there's this Cold War being fought between LeBron and Michael Jordan for greatest of all time. And so the LeBron camp wants to elevate Scottie Pippen. And that's a future article I might write, which is just trying to sort out how I feel about Scottie Pippen. I feel a bunch of different ways in different directions about Scottie. I think he is unique.
I mean, listen, I lived through the 90s. He was terrifying on defense. And yeah. He was by no means, I mean, he would have had much better numbers if he wasn't playing alongside Jordan because he could score. I think he was an all-around five-tool player. I mean, it didn't work out when he wanted to go to Portland and then the Rockets. Like, it was the end. He didn't. And that year when Jordan was playing baseball, like, they did have a good team, but it's not the same. But you're never going to replace Michael Jordan. I mean, come on.
It sort of runs counter to some of my basketball philosophies. One of the reasons I would tout Draymond and say that people don't even understand how good he is that defense is half the game and it doesn't get treated as such. And yeah. Scottie was not overrated on defense. He was really as good as his reputation.
That ability to guard the perimeter and also he could legit post defend most players. It was terrifying. I mean, he could do that. That was the part of it that was incredible. Yeah.
But I would add, and this flared up when Bomani Jones was talking about Scottie, offensively, I think overrated, a good passer, but he couldn't really create his own shot. And that famous sequence where he threw a shit fit over Tony Kukoc getting the
Tony
last
Kukoc
shot.
Was a better shooter for sure.
Well, yeah. And if you watch the game leading up to that, it's Scottie just failing in crunch time and throwing it off the backboard, and he couldn't. I mean, look, he's maybe the greatest role player of all time, but you just can't win a championship if that guy is your. Okay, now I'm exhausting my Scottie Pippen takes for some article.
No, it's really good. One more basketball thing, and we can get into the real stuff or the other stuff.
We can do whatever you want, man.
Okay, all right, Ethan Strauss. I have to ask. Okay, I respect what LeBron has done over the course of his career, but maybe it's because I'm Gen X. I'm like, come on, man. Like, Jordan was 6-0 in the finals. He was in an amazing, an ultra competitive league. And the argument that, like, you only did it with, like, what, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Kyrie Irving, you know, Kevin Love and Anthony Davis. I mean, it's like, come on. Like, you are great. You're the second best. Okay, fine. But
yeah.
And it's like, even if you had 6 rings, I still say it's Jordan because Jordan won every finals he was in.
Yeah. This is an argument I have with Nick Wright.
I know Nick. Oh, first. I like Nick Wright, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. Nick Wright's got his head up.
On that one. And I'll say to Nick, look, you're incredibly skilled with rhetoric and as a debater, and you need to be to make the argument you're making for LeBron as greatest of all time. I, an idiot, can easily make the argument for Michael Jordan. That's not hard. I go, well, he won 6 championships. That's more than LeBron. And he's got more MVPs than LeBron. And he was on 2 of the greatest teams of all time. I'm dividing the three-peats. I don't think we really say that about LeBron. So what are we doing here?
Was the best defender and the best offensive player at the same time.
I just don't know what we're doing here. Look, it's quite commendable to have 20 years of quality and counting. I mean, it's 20
years of being he's still the alpha dog on that Lakers team, and he's what, almost 40. Anthony Davis is great.
Yeah. But that's not how we do things generally when we talk about greatest. We talk about when you were the guy, when you were the greatest player in the league. And there's just no dominance level that's like Jordan's. And then that's even before we get into some of the more subjective stuff, which is the most famous man on earth, the center of attention, the athlete of the 90s, the unquestioned. I don't think anybody was really even having debates during Jordan's career. People were just saying this is the greatest player of all time. That wasn't, right now it's an argument. It's people getting creative, contorting themselves to try to figure out some way. And LeBron was picking and choosing the the teams. And here's where it gets complicated, and maybe we can find some sort of foreign policy segue about unintended consequences. People will go, well, those teams Michael Jordan beat, they weren't the super teams that LeBron James had to go against. I go, well, oh, what? Why did LeBron?
What?
Why did?
What?
Why? But it. What? But it's like, it's like, it's not fair that LeBron had to go against the Warriors with Durant. It's just, well, why did that happen? Why did it happen? Oh, it's because LeBron started that trend. So it's a tricky but argument.
More importantly,
in that
what
way.
Are you talking about? Like, that Supersonics team was nasty with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and Nate McMillan and Detlef Schrempf. That was a good team. The Barkley Suns team wasn't good. They had like three bona fide all-stars on that team. Marley and Kevin Johnson were like legit stars, and Barkley was a super duper star. You know, Jordan beat the bad boy Pistons. That was a great team. His first title was against Matt. Like, it wasn't the same as the peak Showtime Lakers, but it was still Magic Johnson. I don't buy that at all. Jordan beat great competition.
I mean, yeah, Sean.
I mean,
Kemp,
okay, the last two are against the Utah Jazz. All right, fine.
Yeah,
but Stockton and Malone are like all timers. So what are you talking about? You know,
it was a great Jazz team. And Sean Kemp, the Sonics refused to trade him for Scottie Pippen, which is a rarely referenced thing that happened. And the Suns team, I think people don't know that before Barkley got there, they were winning over 50 games.
Like Kevin, underrated, like one of the lost NBA players is Kevin Johnson. Was, you know, like, it's like all those small guards, it's like they have a shorter time like lifeline, but like he was unbelievable. He had incredible hops. He was a tiny guy who could just like, didn't there's a famous Kevin Johnson dunk, I think, on Dikembe. Like, he was one of those few guys who could like, who actually dunked on Dikembe. So, you know, he was great.
Yeah, his career a little bit short. If it had gone longer, maybe he's considered, you know, at a different level historically. I don't really have a segue, Eli, when it comes
I don't want to ask your age on air, but like, do you have any sentimentality for the Run TMC Warriors?
No, okay. I don't.
Before you're
I'm 38 and I grew up in San Diego, and the way that the NBA was, it's like you just didn't have access to following some of these other teams.
Yeah.
I loved the Knicks. My dad's a huge Knicks fan. As every Jewish kid in San Diego's father was from New York and a Knicks fan, according to my research. And so I just would love getting up at 9:30 a.m. for those NBA and NBC Knicks versus Pacers games on a weekend. And that was my introduction to the league. I was at the 1999 NBA Finals with my dad, watching them lose. And no, I started following the Warriors.
Was that the Latrell Sprewell team?
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. It was, I think he missed the final shot to seal it for the Spurs. I started following the Warriors when I started going to Cal. I watched this terrible Warriors team with my roommates. And then all of a sudden the We Believe run caught fire. And at that point I just went, okay, I'm following this team, which was a very stupid decision at the time. I was just miserable and, blogging about Don Nelson's bad decisions on the internet for no reason. And I mean, that it just dictated the rest of my life accidentally.
There you go.
I actually had a decision. Well, I actually had a decision at one point. I was an intern at salon.com during this
really?
Time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, back then it was kind of cool. Now I don't even know what or who runs it, or if it's just AI generated. I don't know what happens.
Yeah, I'm not a salon reader anymore. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I was promoted from being an intern to weekend editor, and I just sort of was rising. It was like I was rising on a sinking ship. You know, they pulled me out of the kind of deck to like this level, that level. But I could clearly see that there was no money in this, and there were half as many people in the San Francisco office as used to be there. And it had this sort of feeling of a kid playing dress up, because I was, you know, maybe 22 or 23, and all of a sudden I'm just commanding an office to myself because nobody's using it.
Right.
And I was promoted to a full-time job doing just a lot of aggregation for them.
Yeah.
But I was also at the same time blogging about the Warriors, and I felt like I had to make a choice as to which way my life would go. And
you chose correctly.
I chose basketball. Basketball good. Over the absolutely insane world of progressive political media. And I don't. It was just, I really just, it was very simple. It was just like, this just seems more fun, even if they lose every night, you know.
And I just, seems like, I mean, I, as a fan who doesn't write about sports, but I love the, I tend to think, based on just watching interviews with basketball players, that they're kind of more interesting and more fun than football players or baseball players or, you know, hockey players or something like that. I always find, like, I could watch, like, interviews with Larry Bird, even though I'm a Sixers fan and I hated Larry Bird as a kid, but, like, Larry Bird is hilarious. And I just find, like, there's something really personable. I actually don't like LeBron's personality, and when I watched The Last Dance, I ended up thinking, like, you know, Michael Jordan's a psycho, but kind of like it. Like, when he was, like, when he watched, like...
Well, it's the authenticity.
It's like he's watching like Isaiah Thomas and he's just like, like, and he still holds on to it. And just, there's something I kind of, I was like, yeah, you know, you're like a psycho competitive guy who probably would have been like, just, it would have been terrible to be your teammate in a lot of ways, but I don't know. I find it compelling. Whereas like with LeBron, I'm just like, your personality was like generated by the woke Borg. Like, I was
well,
like,
today it was like, we don't know what it is tomorrow, and we don't
that's
know
a good
what
point
the
too I he lost me when he called out Daryl Morey, who I love, for his comments about Hong Kong. And I was like, what, you think Daryl Morey, who used to, by the way, do what I do, which is like write about national security stuff, you think you know more, like he should keep his mouth shut because he doesn't know China? What are you talking about?
Okay. It's so interesting you note that, because I can talk about this now. I'm not trying to offend my old bosses, but when that happened, when I was at The Athletic, we had somebody, I won't name who, write an article that was very much in defense of LeBron and in defense of league interests, positioned against Daryl Morey. And I can't remember the exact contents, but that was the angle. And we lost tons of subscriptions. It was a real crisis. It might have been over 1,000 subscriptions, which at the time we were not as big as The Athletic became, and it was a big deal. And so